Welcome to Drinking Bros, presented by GhostBed.com. Sit back, relax, and grab a fucking drink.
Yeah, welcome to Drinking Bros, kids. Getting through the week, aren't we? It's a big boy Wednesday show today. It's going to get weird. There's no other way around it today. I'm sorry to say that in front of the guests, but it's going to get weird today. I look at you, and I think, caveman.
Yeah.
He's a fucking caveman. Am I on the right path?
I think that's a fair assessment, caveman. But I'm caveman with, like, style, I like to say. Like,
caveman with style.
Yeah.
You do. You look kind of Christ-like.
I did. I trimmed up the beard today. Mm. A little bit of deodorant, not too much.
And do you have a ring camera on the outside of your cave?
No, nothing yet.
Yeah. Not yet.
Eventually, not yet. Once I get enough sponsors, I'll throw a ring cam up on there, you know, juice it up right.
Sure. And I want you to tell everybody your name here.
So my name is Donnie Dust.
Yep. And the reason why I'm asking you to say it is because it sounds like a porn star name, and none of this episode sounds real so far.
Pretty much. I mean, I did some light stuff on the side back in like the 80s.
So did Sylvester Stallone, though. That's how you got to start.
Sure did. You ever seen Stallone's porn?
I haven't.
You want to see his cock real quick?
Yeah. We're becoming friends.
Welcome to Drinking Bros, dude. Bob, show that cock. Show Stallone's cock from the 70s there. Just so he knows what show he's on.
It was softcore.
It was.
But they did show his dong.
They showed his ding dong, yeah. He's got a... Well, it's hard to tell, Bob, because the first picture we saw years ago, I was like, not that great of a hog. And then I saw another one, and I was like, all right, decent size hog here.
He's a grower.
Look at that. Hey, wow. I'm a grower.
A lot of that you got to chop through, right?
So. Yeah.
I mean... Well, it's the 70s, though.
That's impressive. I'm not going to lie. I mean...
70s Bush.
The Bush?
Jeez. Yeah, the Bush. Yeah, absolutely. The Bush.
Yeah.
I get like that. Usually when I wear a loincloth, I got to kind of trim it down a little bit. But
do you wear a loincloth?
Absolutely. For special occasions and just Bush
time. What's a special occasion that warrants special about that?
Well, you know, I mean, like if it's, you know, someone's birthday. Yeah, you know, those sort of special occasions. But, you know, I don't wear it to like parent-teacher conferences or anything to that
extent. I think that'd be a pretty big flex, just to have a nut hanging out.
I know.
My son did what? Oh, so my eyes are up here, man.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Could you fucking get adjust
off my
your eye
ball,
level?
Lady.
Yeah. I mean, it's case by case, but most of the time I usually just kind of keep it for special occasions.
So you have kids, and you also do you live in the cave with the kids?
No. So I have two male offspring.
That's a weird way to say that.
Well, I mean, you breed well.
The weirdest possible way to say that.
Sure.
No. So, like, you know, I'm a dad half the time, and then the other time I'm kind of just out in the bush, not a Stallone bush, but like the natural bush.
Yeah.
So it kind of works out where, you know, you hunt, you fish, living in caves, living in shelters. And, so, you know, sometimes my girlfriend goes with me. Which was one of the reasons why I was single for so many years, because I was in a cave.
The cave lifestyle isn't for everyone.
No, it's definitely not for everyone. There's a select group that are interested in that sort of thing.
But, yeah, the Taliban, dude.
Yeah.
The fuck are you talking about?
I mean, what
are
we doing?
You don't actually live in a cave. I feel like we're joking right now. Are we joking? Do you actually live in a cave?
No, he lives in a fucking cave, dude.
Yeah, you know, I mean, yeah, there was large numbers of days and months where I lived in caves, but, you know, after a certain, you know, period of time, I had to kind of move out of the cave, join the normal world, find a girlfriend. But, you know, I give her credit, because even when I actually was living in this lady's basement, I didn't even have a bed. I just slept on like animal hides and a wool blanket. It was pretty romantic. I'm not going to lie. It was an awkward conversation up front. Like, I'm going to welcome you inside. Mm. But what you're about to see is maybe some like P. Diddy shit that's going on right now. You
really?
Know what I mean? I mean, it's weird. It's caribou.
Were you underage?
No.
Was the caribou underage?
Caribou was definitely a smaller kill, but yeah. Either way.
4-year-old caribou.
2-year-old probably.
What's the rule on that? If you bang a 4-year-old caribou, is that underage? Or
I think it's a don't ask, don't sort of tell sort of thing.
But aren't dog years like 7 years? So what's a caribou? It'd be longer.
Not really. So the dog is, after the first year, is more like 16, and then after the second year it's like 21, and then it progresses depending on the breed after that. Talking about biological age.
Gotcha.
I'm a little down on my caribou facts, but I was of age, no worries.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just getting that out of the way here. People are going down left and right in Hollywood. I don't want you going down right now.
I'm not.
But in all sincerity, you are considered as the worldwide expert in remote primitive survival. And why did you even start that? Why did you even figure that out?
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of one of those experiments to see how hard you can make life. You know, with a military background and saying, all right, I want to kind of live remotely in the bush. How hard can I make it? More importantly, how did our ancient ancestors do it? And they did it with stone tools, resources from the land, hunting, fishing, foraging, gathering. And that's not even like a steel knife or an axe. It's stone tools, drinking out of skulls and bowls made from wood. And, you know, maybe you eat today, you don't eat for the next 3 days. It's pretty awesome.
I don't mind drinking out of half a monkey skull.
Yeah. Or like, so we have a bunch of weird stuff that happens if any of us dies.
Okay.
If Jared dies, we get his skull. Yes. To drink out of.
Yeah. Yeah, we
like,
split it.
Yeah. I like it.
We each get half of it and then we split it. And
We should share custody and keep the skull intact so we can use it.
You wouldn't even let me have some of your dried mangoes from Jake's Steaks.
No, you were pulling them out of the wrong fucking box. That was his box.
There's 80 bags in there.
Yeah, like, but what are you, a communist? You don't just get to pick fucking whatever you want.
If they're all the same, yes, you do. Then it's you can the swap it
once,
up.
Once he moves in from one box to the other, then it's separate but equal. Right.
I guess
separate,
but equal, that's what I felt.
Plessy
yeah.
versus Ferguson.
I felt, I felt like I was Rosa Parks in that sitch, and it was like back at the bus, loser.
I almost slapped you.
You did.
So it's close.
You did, yeah,
yeah.
And I said, nah, just like Rosa.
Yeah, that's famous.
That's how we got over it.
Famous quote.
Very famous quote by Rosa. But I really want to break this down.
Yeah.
What was the day that made you say, all right, I want to go back and be a fucking caveman. I'm tired of this world.
Yeah, it's probably right around like 2008, 2009. I was living, unfortunately, in Southern California, and I spent some time out in the bush and started doing long walks, like from the Salton Sea up to Mammoth and really living in the deserts. And then at that time, I was like, all right, I'm carrying too much stuff. I got too many knives and too many resources. Let's just start it. Square one. Let's start with nothing and just build everything from there.
But usually everybody has a breaking point in life of either your job or or work or shit you saw or shit you did.
Being in the military for 12 years to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. But was that it for you?
Yeah. I mean, getting out of the military, I was kind of faced with the options of like working like a normal job, doing some government contracts. And I just didn't kind of want to relive that life that I left. So I just wanted to start fresh, start new, and that primitive skills, Stone Age sort of thing. I mean, it's helped out. I mean, I've met people like Cardi B to bring her out in the bush, and other worked on movie sets because of this kind of unique sort of skill set. As like a technical consultant and whatnot. But yeah, I mean, it's kind of that living proof. Like you can still do what you want to do if you truly enjoy it and love it.
And how did Cardi B get involved in living in the bush? Because she doesn't have one.
No. So,
she's got a WAP, though.
She's got a WAP.
She's got a wet-ass pussy, but there's no bush. Yeah, yeah, shaped up.
One leads
there.
To the other.
You know? Yeah. It's at a certain point in your life, sure. But how does Cardi B get a hold of you? Like, does she read your book or watch it online or something?
No, her team kind of reached out and said, Cardi has a show where she likes to try new things and new experiences, and she'd love for you to bring her out into the bush and kind of show her how to shoot a bow and process water and eat some, you know, turtle and rabbit jerky, build a shelter. So I flew out to California, and before you know it, there was a big shoot going on, and I kind of went and showed her all these kind of unique skills, chased off some wolves that were brought on set to be wild wolves, but it's pretty awesome.
So they weren't real?
No. They were like tamed, kind of like, not like circus wolves, but
drugged up.
Yeah, drugged up wolves.
Yeah, they drug them up. Yeah.
There was a leash on them. You couldn't really see it, but it was good.
What kind of drugs, though? Fentanyl?
No. What they'll do is, if you're doing some with an alligator, for example, what they'll do is they'll feed them a shit ton of food. Mm. So they're real lazy and sleepy, and so you can be around them, and they're not interested in humans.
Then they have Michael Jackson's doctor hit him with propofol.
Yes. Gone. But some of the animals, they it's sedatives. So lions, for example, they use sedatives.
Yeah.
And they're, you know, and they'll tell you.
It's probably, what is it, tramadol or something that they use on animals as well. I think there's one of the like opiates.
Trank them up. You trank them up, but they'll give you a time. They'll say, hey, you got 3 hours to shoot this, or that's it. The animal's going to wake up and
game over.
Yeah, you're dead.
I never heard of this show, but it seems like it would kind of be funny to watch because it's called Cardi Tries.
Cardi
is the name of the show. And some of them are just stupid shit like basketball, ballet, sushi, whatever the fuck. One of them is stunt driving. I would like to watch Cardi B try to stunt drive because that'd be funny as shit.
Yeah.
And then nursery school, like her around children. Yeah, but she doesn't raise those kids. Her grandma does.
Probably.
No, for real. Have you watched any of the videos she puts out about it?
No.
Yeah, it's like the grandma's in charge there. Cardi B tries ranching.
Okay.
Can you imagine that? Like dressed up like a dude, like a cowboy dude.
Yeah, I mean, she used to drug dudes in strip clubs and then steal their money.
I was aware.
They told you that?
I was totally paying attention to like where I put a drink and everything to that extent.
Yeah, you have to. You got to be, or else you wake up without your wallet. Exactly. I don't even know if you own one.
No, I just got one about 2 weeks ago, actually. So I was kind of excited. I was like, all right, not a bad deal. You can put things in it. So
on day one, when you decide, hey, I'm going off the grid, I'm going to be a caveman and just live off the lands, do you have a car? Do you have a house? Do you sell everything? Do you burn it?
Yeah.
Do you give back to the earth, kind of like Into the Wild? Remember Christopher McCandless just left the fucking wallet and just said, all right, great. I have nothing.
I didn't quite go to that extreme. When I was living in California, I took all that, like the high-speed gear, sleeping bags, tents, and all that sort of jazz. Went to Palm Springs, gave it to a bunch of homeless guys, and said, all right, now we're starting at square one. And I took one college class on like Stone Age tools to kind of learn about it. And then I just started making them from there. So like knives and spears and axes, and use those sort of things. I mean, I do own a truck now. I paid it off. Big deal.
Proud of you.
Thanks, man.
Throw up the applause, dude. Yeah. Give him the applause. He's got the headphones on. Right.
Just a little things.
Congratulations. No, it is. Paying off anything in today's world is a fucking huge accomplishment. Yeah. Let's face it.
It's a huge, especially when you're living in a cave and playing, you know, in the woods and stuff.
I mean, what are they going to do? Repossess your cave?
No, they people don't even know where I go. That's the beautiful part about it. You just kind of.
Well, I put a tracker on you. So
Geo tracker.
I'm onto it.
Rectally. So when you sat down and went inside you didn't know that.
I felt a pressure. I'm not going to lie. It was a little unfamiliar, but you know, you guys have been here longer. So.
Well, Meek Mill felt a pressure earlier. That'll be on RPR tomorrow. Jesus Christ. So day one starts.
Yeah.
And you go out. What city are you in and what year is this?
So at this time, it's 2009 in California, and I just started to do a long walk. I call them earth roams, where you just kind of walk with no real plan, no real destination. You just kind of walk from point A.
Like Forrest Gump.
Kind of like Forrest Gump.
You gumped it up.
I gumped it up.
Gumping is when you have sex with a retarded girl, isn't it?
Correct.
I didn't gump it up. Okay. I did. No gumping on this one. Oh, that's funny.
but on day one, what city were you in?
So I was right outside of Joshua Tree, California.
Like Palm Desert area?
Yeah,
Palm Desert.
It's beautiful up there.
Yeah.
It's pretty. It can be brutal in the summertime, though, right? It's like 150 degrees out there.
Or at night, too. It gets cold at night.
Super cold. Yeah. So
which way do you go, north or south?
I go north. I start really at the Salton Sea, and then I walk up through Joshua Tree and then into the Mojave and eventually make my way up to Mammoth, California.
Okay, so night one. You're getting tired, day ends, you've walked how many miles at this point?
Didn't keep track, but far enough to where I was tired. The whole objective was not to, got to do 10 miles, you got to do 5 miles, you got to, none of that. It was to literally have absolutely nothing and just go, kind of being led by curiosity. So when I'm walking, you know, you see like a rock overhang in the distance. You're like, that looks like a great spot where I can sleep. Mm. Maybe there's bats. Maybe there's rats. That's all free food. We'll see what we can come up with and go. So you see rock overhang, walk to it. That's it. Just what's over there.
And and where was this? And are you cold? Do you have a backpack on? Do you have a sweatshirt? Do you have blankets? Do you have a tent?
Just had a wool blanket, a metal water bottle, and then like a small steel blade. That was it.
No backpack.
You just roll the blanket up, tie it around your waist, carry your water bottle, and away you go.
And then first night's sleep, I'm sure that was uncomfortable.
Absolutely.
Like, how brutal was that?
I mean, it wasn't anything where, you know, felt like I was going to die. I mean, I had a wool blanket, so I just wrapped myself up in the wool blanket. Fortunately, the little rock overhang was facing west, so it kind of caught the dropping of the sun, which was heated up. And I mean, eventually it got cold, but it wasn't anything where, the beautiful thing about some of my experiences with kind of the military background, that has really painted the worst possible scenarios, the worst environments, and the worst extremes. So you always have that to kind of fall back on, saying, is it worse than, you know, being in Iraq or deployed somewhere? No, it's not. So you're going to be fine. No one's trying to blow you up. No one's trying to kill you. So this is okay. You'll get through it.
But potentially animals, you know, rattlesnakes.
No worries.
Nothing like that, huh?
No, I mean, you can come across, you know, scorpions, tarantulas, rattlesnakes. They do have black bear in certain regions, mountain lions. But I was pretty familiar with that environment. I was working a search and rescue out there for, you know, a good year. So I kind of knew these areas, but I knew that threat really didn't exist. There's, you know, we were kind of talking earlier, like, you know, fear kind of exists in the mind. It's a projection of something that hasn't happened. So once you can kind of handle that and manage it, you kind of fear less. You don't worry about the things that could happen because they haven't happened. Could you die? Absolutely. But it's very, very unlikely. Just keep kind of progressing, moving north.
And as you're going up to Mammoth, mm-hmm. what was your first human interaction?
Crossing roads. You know, you kind of cross a road, and fortunately in California, there's plenty of homeless folks. So, like, you know, you just kind of look like the average Joe. If I was to stand on the side and kind of wave somebody down, they might respond. But I just run across the roads, kind of give that hand, like, hey, I'm shooting across. And then as I got up by the prison, I kind of had to detour, widen around, because I didn't want to look like an inmate that had escaped.
Oh, no shit.
Because you do look kind of like an inmate that's
escaped.
You sure do.
Yeah, I mean, it's right. I mean, it's happened.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not my first time. Like, I got picked up by the Polizei in Germany for sleeping under a bridge.
Like, so you're like real-life Rambo, then?
I mean, not like real-life. I mean, whoa. I would welcome that.
That'd just be looking for something to eat.
Yeah, it's a fun experiment.
Looking for something to eat.
That's it.
Goes back to Stallone's cock again, dude.
I mean,
hey,
it's beefy.
It sure is beefy.
Beefaroni, some might say. So, like, it's Italian.
Yeah, I mean, without a doubt.
Yeah.
But that first adventure kind of gave into, like, all the kind of continuous days after where, you know, now I live in Colorado, and those sort of adventures are pretty routine. Whether I go out for a week or 10 days or 20 days, it's just minimalist, less is more. What can nature provide? And then try to utilize as much of it as I can.
I forgot to ask you earlier, but do you know Derek Wolf?
Yeah, I know Derek.
Yeah, I figured you guys would know each other. Yeah, he's going to be on our NFL show this season.
Oh, right on.
Yeah.
He's one of my dudes, man. He's such a good dude.
Yeah, I did.
But he's definitely into all this shit.
Yeah. I did his podcast, and we've chatted several times. He's got a big archery kind of event kind of coming up, I think, in May, June. So he's a solid guy.
Yeah,
he rocks.
Yeah.
I've got a million fucking questions for you, dude. Like, this is endlessly fascinating.
This is a guy that's never been in the woods, so he needs to know.
I've been in the woods.
The only time you ever went in the woods was to put down your dog, though, right?
Also Boy Scouts and shit like that. No, I've been hunting and camping a few times.
Yeah.
But the irony of it is when I went, I was up in Big Sur, I think I was 8 or 9 years old.
Okay.
Me and my cousin had walked off together and got lost.
Right on.
So, like, we were missing for hours at that point. And I didn't feel unsafe. But they eventually had to call park rangers and all that other shit to come find us because I didn't know enough about it. But for you, you go from all this human interaction, you go from war to then just complete silence and being by yourself with just this water bottle and then this piece of wool blanket essentially wrapped around your waist. What is the first interaction like after all this time? Is that strange for you? Is it strange for the other person? And then how do you describe this to people? Because even coming in the studio today, our producer was like, hey, dude, that's the fucking caveman. And you laugh about it. But because you've got a massive TikTok, which we'll get to and all that other stuff. But
of all the platforms for a guy like you to blow
up. Like, that's even crazier to me.
Because most of the people who have the app on their phone have never been outside.
Yeah. Ever.
I know.
And so for you, first interaction, are people asking if you're okay, if you're homeless, do you need anything?
Yeah.
Have you been dropped off, raped potentially? Like, because you kind of look like a rape Vic a little bit too.
You know.
Yeah.
I mean, that very first interaction really will exclude, you know, crossing the roads, that sort of stuff. But just north of the prison, Victorville prison.
Yeah.
You know, I was walking kind of adjacent to a road, kind of into these mountains. And somebody was driving. They did stop. They're like, "Hey, where are you coming from?" And I think it was because we were in the vicinity of the prison. And I'm like, "Oh, I'm just, you know, I'm hiking north. I'm headed to Mammoth. Everything's cool." And you know, it's kind of one of those things where they kind of looked at me like, "Well, what are you doing? What exactly are you doing?" And I kind of explained to them, "I'm just doing like a long solo hike. I'm heading up to Mammoth. There was obsidian up there. I wanted to go get some." And that was it. So they kind of like rolled their eyes, looked and said, "Would you need anything?" I said, "I'm all set." and just kept on going. Once I got into Mammoth, it was a little bit more normal because it's kind of like
populated.
Yeah, yeah. Mountain town. They kind of see that sort of stuff. But aside from that interaction north of the prison, there really wasn't much. My objective was to avoid people. And aside from, like I said, crossing a road, you can remain pretty discreet. I mean, especially in the deserts, you kind of move more at night, I guess you could say, and you hunker down during the hot portions of the day. But as time progressed, eventually, as I got farther north, which I knew there would be, there was more resources, more water, more wild edibles that you could wind up munching on. You could eat some rats. I'm not like – I don't recommend eating rats, but like rats are a pretty – yummy thing to eat, like pack rats and like ground squirrels and stuff like that. I mean, it'll put hair on your chest, but probably some on your ass too. But it's not a bad little meal. Little rock salt. It's a good little day, you know.
Well, I'm looking at you now, and you're a big dude who's jacked and all that other stuff. One would imagine when you start doing a journey like this, you drop a shit ton of weight, and you're probably pretty gaunt at that point if you're eating pack rats and squirrels and berries.
You start off calorie positive, you know what I mean? So you kind of, you bulk up with the right foods, and then you know you're going to wind up losing weight. So even if it's, you know, 5 days in the bush, you could wind up eating 10 fish, but you're not going to get the calories. I mean, even something like a trout's got a little bit more fat, but you're going to wind up losing weight. I mean, it's really the ultimate diet program. If you want to lose weight, just go into the mountains and see what you can, you know, forage and hunt and trap and whatnot. And you'll definitely drop some pounds.
Did you know how to hunt and fish before going on this expedition?
Absolutely.
Okay. Yeah. So that kind of gave you at least some advantage of, all right, I can at least provide for myself and get food, and I've done this before.
And before that, you know, it was all military. And before military was, you know, hunting, fishing, camping in that era, you know. So I was born in 79. So it was an era before YouTubes and all that sort of jazz where you were, you know, you went outside and you played, whether you're playing with matches and gasoline or shooting, you know, slingshots at birds. That was what you did. So there was a foundation there. And as I got older, that foundation kind of was more established, learning how to do some of the hard skills, like make fire and build a shelter. And then the military reinforced it. And then as I was transitioning out of the military, that's when all this sort of, you know, long earth roams and adventures kind of kicked off.
Now, what did your parents think about this and your family when you said, I'm going to do this, and I don't know when the next time I'm going to talk to you is?
Yeah, I mean, at that time, I was married, so my ex-wife, she didn't really care too much. She was like, whatever, you know, go do your thing. And then, as far as my parents, I kind of limit the information, you know, because I don't want them to worry. As my mother said, she'd be, you know, worried sick or something like that. So I just let them know I'm out and about kind of doing these things. But as time has progressed, I've kept them more informed. You know,
yeah,
it's a less is more sort of thing. It can cause a lot of stress because I don't bring out like a GPS. This is even before I had cell phones, but even today when I go out and I bring out like a phone, usually I'll bring a plastic bag and I'll cache it, put it underneath a rock, walk out, and then come back to that spot.
And you remember how to get back to that
spot? Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of different methods, but like I do something called sign tracking where I'll walk a bit of terrain, and then I'll pick macro and micro terrain features. So like a big hilltop, a unique kind of geographical feature that's macro, and then something micro that's below it. Mm-hmm. And I'll use those as kind of my visual map as I'm walking, you know, from one side of the state to the other or something like that.
So like in
handrails.
In land nav, you should be like, if there are major terrain features around, somebody should be able to hand you a topographical map and a compass and put you in a place blindfolded, and you should be able to figure out within a reasonable amount of time where you are on that map, right?
Okay.
And it's to be honest, it's not that difficult.
No.
Once you, like, if you study it in a classroom and then go out and try to do it on your own, you're going to get fucking lost. Yeah. But once you've been out there and seen, like, oh, that's what a saddle looks like, right? Then it's relatively easy, to be honest.
Yeah.
It's kind of like Ray Charles when he loses his sight and he's on the ground looking for a cricket. Like, hey, eventually you're going to find it.
Well, I think he was on the ground looking for the heroin that he had dropped.
No, it was a small boy at that point. Heroin was later, okay. Obviously. And then I'll go back to Gump here. We'll Gump it up one more time.
All right.
How long from when you started to when you stopped that you said, all right, I'm ready to go back to life again?
That was only like, I think it was like 18 days. So pretty much, I mean, at that point, once I got up to Mammoth, I just called my ex and she came and picked me up. So that was just like the kickoff adventure leading into multiple. So like at the age of 37, I had a heart attack. I had a massive heart attack. It almost killed me. But that was the point where I started to go a little bit more long term. That was like 6 months into a cave with the occasional visits coming back to see my kids and whatnot. But like, it's always been long adventures, but the one in California was kind of like the kickoff one. And then, you know, when COVID hit, I was in caves. After my heart attack, I was in caves. Before I met my girlfriend, I was in caves. You know, I'd kind of come back, hang out with my two sons, be present as a father, and then roll back in. I mean, COVID was the best because nobody was in the mountains.
Yeah. How did you get vaccinated if you were in a cave?
Yeah.
How are you even alive right now?
No. Yeah, I know.
It's a miracle you're here.
It's crazy.
It's a miracle you're here. Did you have a heart attack out in the wilderness or in town?
I had it in town. I had just returned from Alaska teaching a course, and I was mid training for a super jungle ultramarathon down in South America 6 months in.
Wait, where in South America? Was it in Panama?
No, it was... Because
they do that this thing called Run for Your Life, where you run the whole Panama Canal. My dad did it back in the 70s.
Oh, that'd be cool. This was
50 miles.
Yeah, this was like 245K, and it was a four-part series known as the Axis. So they did one in like the Himalayas, one in South America, and the goal was to, you know, knock out those four regions.
That's cool.
Yeah, it was pretty good. But yeah, so I was training, had this kind of pressure in my chest. You know, people, like most grown men, we die from stupidity, as I always kind of like to say. But I didn't have any like tightening in my arms or my teeth or my lower back. It just felt like, as I expressed, like Satan took a dump on my chest and just burning, burning hot. Mm. And yeah, long story short, my ex drove me to the hospital. They're like, you had a heart attack. I'm like, look, 37, I'm in good health. I don't think I know what you're talking about. You know, you're totally wrong. The guy's like, well, I've been doing this for 40 years. You had a heart attack. And I was like, all right, we'll let you go with this one.
Yeah, so, I'll give it to you. Yeah. I'll give you this one. Yeah,
you get a mulligan.
The only one you get now.
But yeah, so then after that, I kind of came into that healing kind of phase, if you will, where they put me on all these drugs and wanted me to do all this like cardiac rehab, and I'm like, this is not how I want to go about recovering and healing. I knew what I needed to do, so it was moving out into the bush, living in a cave, wearing loincloths, animal skins, and just eating wild and sleeping and you know, bathing in icy cold rivers and like truly healing the body to kind of get to that point of like normalcy. And during that time, you know, I'd come back for a couple of days and hang with my kids and shoot back out in the bush and, you know, shoot another rabbit and eat it. And this is kicking off into like Colorado March. So there's still snow on the ground.
Oh, wow.
It's freezing cold. So, I mean, it was a good time. Put hair in your chest.
And I think why your story is so fascinating and why everybody at home is going to be interested in this is I think a lot of people think about doing things like this. They never end up doing it, obviously. You're the only person that I know who has actually done it.
Right on.
Living a life on your own and isolated and hunting and fishing and doing all that stuff and then coming back to the real world, which do you prefer better?
Yeah, see, that's a good question. Because I love the real world as far as the people that are there, whether it's, you know, those close personal connections, but I love the freedom that the natural world provides as far as, like, there's no one out there to tell you what to do, how to go about doing it, you know. So I found a balance between them both. And the one, the natural world kind of draws me in, but then that kind of normal world draws me back out with, you know, seeing my loved ones and things to that extent. But, you know, some people struggle. Like, you don't have to go balls deep, you know, 100% every single in one sort of venue if you want. You can kind of go back and forth. And I think for me, I was 100% balls deep at one point. Now it was, all right, let's just try to find that balance because I wanted to be a father, wanted to be present. I want to, you know, go to parent-teacher conferences, have to look a teacher in the face and be like, I don't have any idea what you're talking about. Look at my kid and be like, let's get the hell out of here and, you know, go about our business. But it's a balance.
And it helps when you're wearing a loincloth in that scenario.
Yeah. It does.
Yeah. Kids get straight A's. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah, because they're afraid you're going to rip their face off like a goddamn wild orangutan. And I understand that.
It's happening.
I like it. Yeah, exactly. You just, I could wear your fucking face, dude. I could wear your skin over my fucking face.
That's it. Nobody will know.
Nobody will know except me in the woods, you know. No mirrors, no nothing. I'm just doing it just to do it.
Now, do you have a volleyball?
No.
I don't have a Wilson.
I have a Finn, which is my dog that I've acquired, you know, maybe like 2 years ago, but he's I think it was like a res dog. They usually dogs that get kind of crossbred on reservations, but he was eating roadkill up on the side of the road. I found him. I'm like, you like roadkill? I like roadkill. We should be buds.
And simpatico.
We should be homies.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, roadkill.
Do you guys get matching tattoos?
No, not yet. Sure. Not yet. He's a Pitsky mixed with a little coyote. So he's a pit bull, husky, and coyote. So he has a game drive and like food drive. Like, you know, he'll run out the cave, go catch a rabbit. He'll like gnaw on it for maybe like 45 minutes and bring me back like half of it.
Really?
Yeah. He's
That's fun.
He's really good. He catches squirrels and rats and rabbits. He's fish. He's a killer.
God damn, dude. The two of you guys found each other.
Yeah.
Love in a hopeless place is
pretty
Rihanna
much,
says.
Man.
I like it.
It exists. There is a chance.
Yeah, exactly. There's a chance. If you didn't have a girlfriend, kids, all that stuff, would you remain in the wild?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
And just never come back?
Probably. Yeah, I'd probably go north into like Alaska, or I would head way down south Texas into like the Chihuahua Desert, where it's just two super extremes, but I really enjoy the deserts. It takes all the guesswork out of what's available there as far as food, water, and resources. Like whatever is. You can't be like, well, let me walk over this hill and see if there's better options. Like what exists. But I love the deserts, but Alaska just has a lot of great things to eat as far as, you know, wild game and berries and things.
Salmon,
grayling,
yep.
You name it. It's absolutely awesome. So I love those two regions. But the mountains give you a lot as well. Same kind of mixture of both, because not all plants exist at like 9,000, 12,000 feet. So,
well, I would imagine the deserts, you know, there's not a lot of trees and things like that. So shade is not really an option. Food, what are you looking at? Lizards, coyotes and shit like that. Not a lot of options for food.
Mm-hmm.
Water, where are you getting water out in the desert?
Yeah, so I mean, water is not too hard to find. If you look in a desert environment, there's big patches of green and vegetation. Usually there's groundwater. And then in the American Southwest, most of our rainy season is that like June, July, and August. So in certain deserts, you'll have a hard kind of limestone bedrock sort of layer. And as the water falls, it goes through the dirt and then gets trapped there. So you can dig for water. There's springs. You do get the rain. But when you think of a desert, just don't think of like, you know, the Sahara Desert, a super sandy environment. In certain areas of like the Chihuahua, there's huge, you know, canyons and rock overhangs and caves.
You're right.
So there's diversity in that geography. It's where those shady areas are and those water deposits are ultimately brings in other things to eat. Because if they're resourcing it, you're going to resource it, and it gives you an opportunity to get a meal. So there's like Audad and bear, elk a little bit farther north, mule deer. You can get, you know, there's all sorts of nuts and berries and sumacs and fennels, all sorts of wild things that you can definitely eat. People have sustained in that environment for thousands of years.
Do you ever eat anything poisonous out there that you didn't know? And then what was the reaction to it?
I mean, well, just peyote.
But that was on purpose.
So. Yeah.
Oh, it was it's on
a,
purpose?
It's a William C. LaFora cactus. You can spot it from a mile away if you're looking for it.
It's got all these little buttons
just
on it.
Just pop that button off and...
Now... You're speaking my language. Now you're out there on peyote. That's how I get.
Then it's young guns too, right?
Yep. Pretty much.
You're up on the cliff face, just getting just shit face. Hopefully, you don't fall off. I would say do it at ground level if you can.
Yeah. Don't want to go in the spirit world too high.
Yeah,
you know? Sure.
Yeah,
do you know what the dosage is?
Gravity still works.
Yeah, you thumb cap it.
Yeah.
So everyone's thumb and their thumbnail is the perfect like proportion to take a dosage of something. So even if you're coming across a mushroom you're unfamiliar with, this is the mushroom, and I pull off a chunk that's the size of my thumb cap, it's a good way to introduce something that's foreign into the body and then to see how your body responds. So
I should be doing this much cocaine is what you're saying.
That's not a lot.
That's not enough.
That's not enough to really have a good time.
Both thumbs.
It's enough to take the edge off.
Get you started.
Enough to take the edge off, but it's not enough to... You know,
but my first time doing that, I did it with a guy named White Bear that lived down in the deserts.
That's a good name for a dude to do fucking peyote or mess.
Engine was the engine.
Yeah. He was a Native American. So he kind of walked me through the process. You kind of get sick up front, and then I didn't get like that whole, like, you know, I'm in another dimension or anything like that. I just kind of like felt a little bit like light and airy and kind of loose, if you will. But I didn't go like to the 12th realm and then talk to some sort of alien species or anything like that.
I don't know. With actually, mescaline makes me more sick than just straight up peyote does. But after I, if I do purge, I don't always, but after I do, I've got to take a lot to make the walls melt, like a lot. And I'm not sure if that's really helpful, to be honest.
I think you might be right. I don't do it all that often. This was an experience with him, but I don't like to get that out of it, if you know what I mean. I could see the benefits for a lot of folks, sure, but for me,
it's therapeutic. Yeah, but if you're just trying to have a good time, probably take it easy.
My God, dude. Because, Donnie, you look like you've had a good time, brother.
You know, I get around. I do what I got to do.
I didn't think you'd drop a Tupac reference on the show today, but I'm a fan.
All right.
So when you get out of all of this, how do you meet the girl?
Yeah, that's a really good question.
Well, she's of like type, I guess.
Well, she's a Texan, which makes it, you know, even better. But she actually signed up for a winter survival course, and I had to put her on like a waiting list because, you know, I was maxed out. But we kind of started a conversation because we both share the same species of dog. So she's like, "Hey, I've got a dog. Where do you bring your dog?" I'm like, "I bring it out of the mountains." And she's like, "Well, you know, let me know some spots." So I kind of let her know some spots. I'm like, "If you want to meet up, I'd be happy to show you." And she's like, "Yeah." I'm like, "That's the first time a woman has ever agreed to meet me in the woods without really knowing anything about me."
Yeah, that's suspicious on both of your parts.
Yes.
Like, for you to ask and for her to accept.
Yeah, because she's done it before. No. Obviously, you have.
Well,
that her first time?
That was her first time. Her being a Texan, she came strapped with knives and pistols. Yeah. And like, she was ready to throw down in case
shit popped off.
Yeah, anything went crazy. But yeah, we met, we went for a hike, and then we just kind of, you know, started dating there. But I give her a lot of credit because she's probably 105 pounds soaking wet, and I've brought her into the mountains in some really harsh environments. Where, you know, I'm dragging a sled with, you know, caribou hides and animal hides, and she's carrying a pack, I'm carrying a pack, and this is like the second date that we're on. You know, because, you know, dating, everyone dates differently, but for me, I was like, I need someone hardcore. Mm. You know what I mean? And for her, I mean, I put her, it was like probably like 15 degrees out, no tent, no food. We're just sleeping on a tarp, and she's got a dog, I got a dog. And she makes it through the whole adventure, no issues. And I'm like, damn, she'd be good to breed with. You know what I mean?
Wow, that's where I'm going with this.
Yeah.
The first time you have sex out there, what's that smell like?
Campfire, evergreens.
It's amazing. No, each other.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, none of you guys are showering, you fucking dumbass.
Yeah, you shower in the creek, man.
Yeah, but is that part of it? Like, do you say, "Hey, we're going to creek it up and then we'll go back to the tarp"?
I mean, you could creek it up. I usually smoke bathe, if you know what that is. You know,
sure don't, friends. Look at me. This looks like a guy that smoke bathes.
So, like, if you start to get
Wearing a crew neck sweater right now.
Smoke from bathe. A vodka distillery, for Christ's sake. Shout out Dripping Springs Vodka. Yeah, man. But I'm not a had a smoke bath before. What does that entail?
It's basically you build a fire, you put some kind of punky wood on there with some evergreen.
Okay.
And then you kind of strip down, you get naked, and then you get a low smoke and you let that smoke work over your body, and it will kill any like bacterias or any bugs. Like if you're at fleas, never mind.
Me? Have fleas?
Yeah. I mean,
no, bro. No.
Yeah. You've had fleas.
Yeah.
Yeah. So certainly, that smoke will get rid of like fleas and kind
sand
of
fleas and shit.
Sand fleas.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Kind of, you've experienced sand fleas at Carolina Beach before. Those little things that leave little red marks on your ankles and shit.
Oh, well, we would have to burn those fucking candles. So very similar.
Citronella.
Yeah. Citronella. I mean, totally.
Yeah. So same thing.
The smoke gets rid of all that sort of stuff, but you can use your smoke to kind of cleanse your body. And if you throw different aromatics in there, whether you got some sage or you got maybe some yarrow or mullein, it adds a little smell because sometimes the streams are frozen over, so you can't get to them.
Right.
So you can roll in the snow, but I mean, snow is a really great way to dry off if you're wet. But just a good little smoke bath. You smell fresh. You smell clean.
But you don't even have condoms on you.
No.
Yeah. Kidding. No, we don't use them on the show. We never believe in that shit.
Yet. I got a vasectomy.
You got a V-sec?
Yeah, with no anesthesia.
Did you do it yourself?
No, I did it
with stone tools.
Obsidian. Yeah, I was going to say, do you bang them shits, dude?
Nah, man, it's just real quick and easy. No volume, no nothing. I was like, because my ex was like, "I've had two kids. You know what the pain is like." I'm like, I got two nugs. I'll show you what it's like. So I went in there. They just kind of, you know, first the whole process was that you got to sign some waivers, and I went in, kind of signed all my stuff. They're like, all right, you got to take Valium. I'm not taking Valium. Then they taped my penis to my chest, and then
take it easy, dude. Come on, man.
That's what they said.
What do you think, you're Sly Stallone over here?
Whoa, to your chest. You mean they taped it to your tummy?
Just below my belly button.
Yeah.
It's my story, so I'm going to tell how I
was. Yeah, man. So after they threw it over my shoulder, I was ready to go. Yeah,
they caught it up. It took us 2.5 hours.
So they punched two holes, cut them, and I was like, all right, that's fine. It wasn't that bad. A couple of like Pabst Blue Ribbons in between the nugs later on brings the swelling down. So
yeah, a couple cold ones down
there. Yeah, you keep it simple. Keep it simple. Keep them, rotate them out.
And was she happy or sad about that?
She, my ex at the time was pretty happy. We kind of did some planning, but it's only worked out for me as, I progressed forward in life and, kind of was, dating and whatnot, and then met my girlfriend. So it's kind of one of those things where it's like something we don't have to worry about.
And how long you guys been together?
3 years, 3 years.
Okay.
But she's into like medicinal plants and the bush and really, really, really knowledgeable when it comes to like medicinal plants as far as.
Like when you say medicinal plants, you're not talking about what when people say plant medicine. You're not talking about ayahuasca and shit.
No.
You're talking about like literal medicine.
Literal medicine. So like taking the bark off a willow tree is a natural form of aspirin. Collecting cottonwood buds to do a burn salve or something like that. Mm. So taking all the natural components that exist in nature and turning them into medicines that you would need for an infection. Like my trip to the Amazon, came back with a parasite from just drinking the water, and she made a tea, and in a couple, it was gone pretty much in like 48 hours, 36 hours.
And now, do you guys own a house in real life too?
We don't own a house. We rent a house.
Okay.
And I have to, I kind of keep a house because as a father with two teenage sons, they have like a normal kind of pattern of life, going to school and working and playing lacrosse. So she lives there with me. And then my boys jump back and forth between their mom and myself.
And what do your kids think about what you do?
You know, they're kind of all for it. They don't mind. It's not like, I embarrass them or anything like that. Fortunately, they've been like big kind of coaches in some of this social media stuff. Like how do I, like when the whole TikTok thing came around, like my youngest one was like, I'll coach you in this because I only went on it because he wanted to go on it with his friends. And at first I was like, there's no way. I'm sorry, man. I've heard the war stories. So then we kind of went down this thing where it was like a trial and error. And then I felt weird being like a 40-year-old man watching like all these dances.
Kids dance.
Yeah. I was like, Taylor Swift. This is horrible. Mm. And he's like, just make your stuff. And then eventually you'll kind of go to a different side of it. And I started making, stone tools. And next thing you know, it's just blown up to uncontrollable numbers.
Right. And what is that number right now? How many followers do you have?
It's over 10 million.
Holy shit.
Yeah, I think on TikTok it's like 15 or something. Or some shit. I don't
15
know.
15 million. Yeah, Bob, can you pull that up? Donnie Dust TikTok?
I think it's 10.7.
Yeah, there you go.
10.7.
And million. Do you even know as this is happening because you're out in the woods or are you going back and your kids are telling you, hey, Dad, you're not going to believe this. You've exploded on the internet.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of how it first started. And like my son was like, you get a lot of people following you. And I'm like, well, great. What does that mean? And he kind of like laid it all out. Like it's not the worst thing. And he's like, well, just keep making more stuff. And then for a while, TikTok was, paying money for videos based on like views and stuff. So I'd post a video of me making like a makawaddle or some sort of knife. And you get, $2,000, $3,000 off of something like that. I'm like, wait a minute. So I can just make shit and they'll give me dollars.
Do what I'm doing anyways. And that's they're going to pay me.
Yeah. So that's amazing. I'm just hitting record and, That was pretty much it. So it's worked out and people are completely fascinated by it, especially when it comes to like the stone and the survival sort of stuff. And, there's countless people that I've, chatted with that are now kind of going down that stone tools route, exploring some of the survival and just kind of living remotely. And, I'm like, cool, man. I ask nothing of anybody. I'm like, you don't have to buy shit. You don't have to do anything. Don't send me anything. I don't want anything. Like,
yeah.
Just sit back and watch. I'm not here to influence you. I'm not here to say anything.
And like, neither are we. Yeah. I mean, if you want to buy a bro box at drinkingbros.com, that's up to you, obviously, but we're not here to do that either. We never have, never will. Yeah. Donnie, you've been on podcasts before. Obviously, we got some sponsors. that keep a shelter over our heads. Donnie, first and foremost, ghostbed.com/drinking bros. I know you don't sleep in beds, but we do. And right now, everybody else at home who is sleeping on beds inside of houses can get them for 50% off. The promo code Drinking Bros at checkout. You can also get 50% off pillows, sheets, mattresses for RVs, everything in the store. 50% off. It's all half off. Ghostbed knows we're going through a recession right now and inflation is high. They're trying to take care of us. God bless them. Every mattress is also made in the USA, and that's a rarity these days for mattress companies. Comes in a box, ships right to your house, drag it in your room, pop it open, and you're good to go. Just bought my son one. My youngest, Jagger, dude, is sleeping in a bunk bed now, like a big boy, with his older brother, so I had to get a single. They have singles there as well, so you can get a single mattress, you can get a queen, full, twin, and then you can also get the big dogs if you want. Those Cal Kings, California Kings are in there, as well as a regular size king mattress. You name it, I got a mattress for it. They also got the adjustable bases there as well. Love mine. If you get one of those things, I promise you, you won't go back to a mattress without one. Now at checkout, pop in the promo code Drinking Bros, 50% off, boom, good to go. Also, you're going to see a 3-year pay-as-you-go program. No interest as long as you have decent credit over there. That way you can stretch it out for 3 years. Stretch those payments out for 3 years. Put whatever you want in the cart, get 50% off, and then stretch it out over 3 years. Best night's sleep you'll ever have in your entire life over at ghostbed.com/drinkingbros. Next up, we got mybookie.com. Promo code Drinking Bros doubles that first deposit all the way up to $1,000. D'Anthony, tomorrow's opening day.
Yep.
In the major leagues. I know you and Bob obviously host Tomahawk, the baseball show. But you guys also gamble on baseball in real life here. Who do you like tomorrow?
Well, usually in baseball, I bet parlays,
mm-hmm.
right? Because it's not like other sports. There's 14 games most days, right?
You can win a shit ton of money.
14 or 15, yeah. So the bet that I have on right now, it doesn't include Friday's games. We'll update this on fake news, but it doesn't include Friday's games with the Brewers and Braves and Phillies. But right now I've got Orioles beating the Angel. This is my parlay. Orioles beating the MT. These are all money line, by the way.
Okay.
Yeah, you go money. So all the lines are like usually 1.5. So yeah, just go money line.
Yeah,
the odds are almost never worse than like -250.
Yeah, it's not.
And usually they're a bit under that.
So I got the Orioles beating the Angels. That seems obvious. I've got Framber Valdez taking the Yankees down. Houston over New York. Dodgers beating the Cardinals. Reds over Nationals, Indians over the Oakland A's, the Mariners over the Red Sox, and the Diamondbacks over the Rockies, and that's about 20-1.
Okay,
to win that.
Damn, dude, I picked the exact same parlay. Minus, I thought the Yankees Astros was a little too close for comfort. But I have all the rest of those in a parlay.
Like, well, I don't think Stanton's playing.
He's a corpse anyway. I don't even care about
him. Yeah. We'll see.
That's Astros Yankees was the only one that scared me a little bit, but I love, there's a lot of great matchups where good teams and, or obviously it's opening day. So their number one starters going, their ace is going
mm-hmm.
against bad teams. So like the Diamondbacks playing a shitty team, the Mariners playing a shitty team. The Orioles are playing a bad team. The Reds are playing maybe the worst team in baseball and the Nationals. Dodgers are the only ones playing what I would call a good team. I mean, the Cardinals could win their division, so the Dodgers are playing a decent team. But I don't know. Glasnow, home opener, Shohei Ohtani, blah, blah, blah. I love it.
Yeah. And you can win 20-1 odds in that. So it's big boy odds out of there. I think the Arizona Diamondbacks are a sleeper this year.
They made the LCS last year.
They did, but it was kind of unexpected.
Won the LCS, rather.
I think this year they might even have a better year this year and have a shot at the actual title.
It's possible.
They just had a big signing. So
yeah. Now, for me, tomorrow night, I am betting all the Final Four matchups here. The Sweet 16 is in full action. By the end of the weekend, we will have our final four. I've got Arizona over Clemson. I've got UConn over San Diego State. I've got UNC over Alabama. And then I've got Illinois taking down Iowa State there. Going to do some parlays and then also single game betting as well over there. Blackjack is rocking. The casinos open at mybookie.com. And the golf picks are already in here from Delco and I on Delco Dan's Dirty Golf Picks. We bet those every single week as well.
Houston Open this week.
Sure is, friend. Tons of stuff to bet on across the board. Get off the couch and get into the action today and turn your love of sports into your new side hustle over at mybookie.com. Promo code Drinkin' Bros doubles that first deposit up to $1,000. Last but not least, hardafseltzer.com. If you're watching all the games or going to them or partying in the parking lot, tailgating for some of these games, grab yourself a 12-pack of Hard AF Seltzer, all right? Get it! Go to hardafseltzer.com today and go to the store locator. Type in your city or zip, and it'll take you to the closest store nearest you. Florida, wide open, dude. Wide open tomorrow. Rays are playing in town. We're in the stadium there as well. You can get some Hard AF Seltzers inside the Tampa Bay Rays Stadium there. We're available at every single Total Wine down there in Florida. Georgia's wide open. We got 300 locations there. Alabama's wide open. Piggly Wiggly's. Braves playing tomorrow?
They're postponed until Friday.
Ah, gotcha. All right. Because Alabama's in there. Yeah, all of Alabama follows the Braves, too. We're in North Carolina, Wilmington. We're in that Total Wines. All the brunches out there. If you're watching some of those afternoon games, or head on over to Whiskey Creek and watch all the games if you want to. Those NCAA games will be a blast that night. Columbus, Ohio, got a ton of bars and restaurants there as well. Standard Hall's rocking all day long tomorrow. Short North Pint House. Open Urban Myers Pint House up there in Dublin is rocking. If you're in Nashville, head on down to Frugal McDougal and just grab five 12 packs. Bring them back to your house. Down here in Texas, we're in 50 HEBs, all the Total Wines in the state, and then Kroger down there in Houston. Hit up that Kroger for us. We're trying to get into Kroger nationally here. Demand it. Tell them you want it in the Kroger closest to you. And if you are in Houston, just go down there and buy out the store, all right? Now, if you're not in one of those states or one of the surrounding states, we still ship right to your house at hardafseltzer.com. Support us and support the show.
So if you run into a situation, I've got some specific questions.
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah,
lay it out.
Let's say you run into a situation where you need some lube in the woods.
Yeah.
Where does that come from?
Aloe.
I don't know that I would use. Aloe's got a high viscosity. I don't know if I would use that.
We're talking like sex lube.
Yeah. Well,
animal fats.
Okay.
Yeah, it's all natural.
It's gonna be a smell.
Right. But that's gonna stink.
No, it's not. Fat's good. You got to join the tallow eaters. People that eat the raw animal fats.
I've got a bunch.
Yeah.
That's actually all I cook in is
animal fat.
It's Wagyu tallow.
Wagyu tallow.
It's like super clean. It's really good.
Yeah. Jake was over at the house and he was telling me about that. And he goes, oh, yeah. Do you want some of his fat? I was like, no, I don't want that shit. Man.
All you do is boil it down. I mean, it's not
that's what he was saying. Tallow.
Yeah. You render it.
That's what he was saying.
Melts.
But with you, I understand the fascination with you. Like, there's some people, man, where I just don't fucking get it.
Yeah.
Like YouTube, for example. I look at YouTubers out there, and it's, to me, the most untalented people who are the faces of YouTube and shit like that. And I'm just like, holy shit, with you, here's the fascination. And maybe somebody said this to you in the past, maybe they haven't. I think you're doing shit that we all wish we could do. Mm. And just take off and have the freedom to do it. But unfortunately, like, I've got kids and responsibilities and businesses and all this shit. I can't even leave for like 48 hours, I feel like. So like my last flight 2 weeks ago, I was in Los Angeles. Yeah. And I was there for 36 hours.
Damn.
And it was for three meetings. And then boom, I'm out of there and I'm back on a flight. And then I'm back here because we do this job every single day.
Yeah.
But I also feel responsibility because we've grown, you know, a bunch of fans and listeners and all that stuff where I don't want to miss because I know that they want this every day. So I feel like a greater responsibility to do it.
Yeah.
And I think your videos and you as a person and what you're doing on TikTok is everybody else's escape, where instead of watching just stupid mindless bullshit of Chewbacca mom or, you know, somebody putting bottle caps on their shoes and tap dancing to... Mm. a fucking Michael Jackson song. This is the escape that they're actually looking for, but there isn't, I don't know anybody besides you that's doing this shit right now in real life.
Yeah.
Therefore, to go to a channel like this and just kind of live it out for at least a few minutes out of your day,
yeah,
kind of makes you feel better.
Yeah, I appreciate that. You know, I think the one thing that helps in this is like people that send me a comment, I reply to them. Like, I don't have this mentality because there's so many followers here on YouTube. Like, I'm too cool for you or I'm anything different than anybody else. Someone's like, hey, man, I really liked how you did that video. Thanks for making it. I'll get on there and say, hey, I appreciate it. Thank you. Thanks for watching. Thanks for taking 1 minute out of your day to watch something I made. Now, you could get 1,000 comments, 10,000 comments. I can't get to everyone, but I still make an effort. And I think that's where a lot of people these days, they have a certain influence, or they're in the kind of the limelight a little bit more, and they separate themselves from the reality of what it is to be a human being. It's connecting and finding an opportunity to reach, you know, an 18-year-old kid or a 48-year-old man saying like, look, you guys can go and do this. I appreciate you watching my stuff. I'll happy to answer your questions. Like, I'm not an asshole. So, and I'm not saying people that don't do that are, but like, I think I've just grown because I've connected with people and it's given me an opportunity to, you know, have a shit ton of followers and wind up, you know, having followers that actually follow, they show up, they watch because they know if they do leave a comment, maybe after that first 30 minutes, an hour, hour and a half after I posted, I'm going to be there and I'm going to be, hey man, I appreciate you coming in. Hey, yeah. How can I do this? Give them an answer. Give them a response. Like, we shouldn't kind of separate ourselves. And I know there's a lot of people out there that like to post and ghost and do all this sort of stuff. Well, you should be thankful that those people watch your stuff, because if it wasn't for them, those sort of things would not exist. Whether it was a TV show, a podcast, or whatever it is. I mean, connect to your audience. That's really what builds that community.
How do you deal then with the negative comments? So for me, take Instagram, for example. Yeah. So I'll answer people on Instagram because usually I know them. It's, yeah, it's very rare that it's strangers that I don't know, to a certain extent. A couple strays here and there, that's about it. Yeah. YouTube is a whole different fucking beast.
Sure.
Where you don't know what video is going to catch and why, and it just could be pure rage and hatred.
For sure.
And then kind of same with Twitter to a certain extent. Is there people that get in your comments and say negative shit at all, and does it affect you?
No, first off, I'm a grown man, so someone's words don't hurt me. That's just the way it is. If they kind of start to antagonize other people, I send them grid coordinates, and that's just basically let them know where I'm at. If they want to discuss it,
yeah,
you can come to that grid coordinate and we can fucking discuss. One, they got to know what a grid coordinate is, and two, know how to get there.
My dad's got a helicopter.
There you go.
So perfect. I'll be there in the morning.
We'll be fine. But no, I mean, I don't really get a lot of negative comments. I'm not promoting anything except this is what I do. You can show up and watch or you don't have to. So there's not an expectation. Like, all of my builds are based off of what people have asked, you know, to build. So somebody says, can you build a knife? I'll look at the camera, say, can you build a knife? I say, yeah, I build a knife. Thanks for watching. Like, I'm not here to tell you, like, if you want to buy this knife or you want to do this or you want to, you know, grow a beard, you know, that's it. It just makes it easy. There's no expectations on their part or my part, whether they like it or they don't like it. It's totally fine with me. I do have one troll on YouTube that we've actually become pretty good friends. His name is Red Dog, and he used to like...
That's how I am.
Yeah, he loves it.
Like, the only reason I even read the comments is in case somebody says something funny. I don't care if it's towards me or not. I don't who fucking cares, right? If it's funny, if you're trolling me good, that's fucking funny.
Yeah, he'll respond to it, whereas I won't, just because I don't want it in my mind for the day. Like, I want to come in... No, I want to come in with an open mind every single day.
Yeah.
Do the show that I think is... what I want to do and successful and all that other shit with Dan. Mm. I don't want to hear people's negative shit. So I'll try
to. I don't think it's always
it.
Negative though. That's not what trolling always is. Sometimes people are just like, cause I'm like that. I'm a dumb dick like that. If so, like somebody could walk in here and do something and it'd be like, maybe it's gallows humor or something. My brain immediately goes to the worst possible place. And it's funny to me, right?
Yeah.
So what happened? What's this guy's name again?
His name was Red Dog.
Red Dog.
And what was the first initial comment that Red Dog made?
I mean, this is like a while, but like we have become friends, but it was like, oh, I think you're full of shit, you know? And I was like, all right, grid coordinate. And then he would kind of respond. And then it's kind of turned into this stuff where he would make comments about like different TV shows. So then my replies would be like, well, hey, look, man, if you want an opportunity, I'm happy to put you in the right, you know, kind of contacts, this sort of stuff. And then eventually they would come and I'm like, are you the same troll? He's like, yeah, man, it's me. I'm like, where have you been? Like he would kind of dive in and then dive out. And then I started wondering like, well, what's going on? You okay? He's like, yeah, man, I've just been real busy with work. Well, you know, you're my favorite troll. Get on there and, you know, give me some more shit. I'm totally fine with it. All right, I'll be on there tomorrow. You know, so it kind of morphed, but it wasn't anything where like you need to kill yourself or, you know, yeah. You know, take a long walk off a short, you know, cliff or something like that.
Oh man, I've said some awful shit to people.
You're thinking like, oh man.
I'm like, oh, there was one person, that's why I don't do it, but I'll have to take screenshots for advertisers and shit, right?
Yeah.
And I'll catch a comment and I'll reply to it. There was one day this one dude caught me with a comment when I was like, motherfucker, I was just taking a screenshot for an advertiser. And then I just launched into it. But a DM to him. So it wasn't on my public feed.
Yeah.
A DM to him that just broke down how the rest of his life was going to go step by step and then decade by decade and what age he was going to kill himself at and why. And like, it was so fucking dark and like, forgot about it. And then, I don't know, maybe 2 or 3 months later down the road, I was like, oh shit, dude.
No.
I remember writing that thing to that guy and just ended his life, probably.
I mean, that's like an average text I send to one of my friends.
Yeah.
To but it's honest. A friend.
Yeah.
But true. This is a total stranger. Yeah. That's the deal because in the age of the internet, and here's where I'm going with this, in the age of the internet, you're so far off the grid and in the internet and everything else that like, shit, that's not your world at all. No. And you don't know who's on the other side of it and who the fucking keyboard warrior is or any of that shit.
True.
And, you know.
Well, it's never, nobody that's talking shit on the internet is anybody I'm worried about.
Yeah, that's right? My kind of mentality. Like,
come on, man.
Yeah.
Like real dudes are out there doing dude shit.
That's what I mean. The grid coordinates, my number one tell. They're like, well, those are a bunch of fucking numbers. I'm like, yeah, I don't got to worry about
it. Yeah, I was right not to be afraid of you, yeah.
Yeah. And I've got 3 grid coordinates with all the locations I'm pretty routinely at, and they'll never make it. That'd be awesome.
Now, you've got a book coming out here.
Yes, sir.
Wild Wisdom, Primal Skills to Survive in Nature. Pop that up on screen.
Oh, so you are selling something. This whole, you are full of shit.
No. I think at the end of this journey, now you've lived that life long enough where people want to know. I mean,
sure.
Yeah.
For yeah.
Tell everybody what the book's about.
I think I own every single one of any kind of book that's like this.
Oh, right on,
like,
man.
Well, anything Ranella writes, I buy, because there's always like nuggets in there, you know?
Yeah. I'll send you guys. I've got a bunch of things I'm going to send.
I already bought it, so don't worry about that.
Well, appreciate it.
Yeah, I always buy it immediately.
Yeah, we buy everybody's books that come on the show.
Thank you. You guys didn't have to do that. But it's really just a kind of a survival book. This is how you can kind of go about approaching the woods. You don't have to have grown up hunting or fishing or anything to that extent, but more or less, this is kind of your first textbook, if you will. It teaches you how to sharpen a knife, sharpen an axe, build traps and shelters, find clean water. I even got a couple recipes in there on how to cook a possum, a raccoon out in the bush, as well as in your crock pot at home, because I like to eat rodents. They're delicious. But it's just
kind of... In your house?
Yeah. Back me up on this.
No. Yeah, I've never been to your house for a smoked rat.
No, I mean, I live in Texas.
Yeah, man, it's normal.
Like,
it's not.
Yeah, like you didn't eat squirrels and shit when you were growing up?
Did not. No. Killed them, but I didn't eat them.
Squirrel and dumplings. Mm. That's good.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, you just got to kill like fucking 80 of them to get any meat off, because it's not, it's like what, 4 ounces of meat in a squirrel, something like that?
It's like a little wing.
It's a pittance.
You eat the legs kind of like a chicken wing, you know, but yeah, I mean, I've got recipes in there. It's just chock full of knowledge and skills and certain abilities folks should do that are just kind of, you know, learn about who they are and how they're going to go about kind of exploring the woods. There's nothing extreme. I'm not going to show you how to, like, you know, hunt a bison with an atlatl and take it apart. It's basic survival, kind of basic methodologies, chalk with some kind of stories that I kind of, encountered and whatnot. So
you said hunt a bison with what?
An atlatl, which,
is that an axe?
No, it's a
stick ladle.
It's like a 6.5-7 foot long spear.
Yeah. There's a video of somebody killing one from last season.
Yeah, I've got
maybe it's yours that I saw. Somebody goes over a small ridge, and the thing's kind of eating in a little meadow down here, and he fucking puts it right through his back. I mean, it's a perfect throw. But you got to be close as fuck to throw that thing.
Well, that bison was sedated. I won't go into the whole story of that, but
that's gay.
Yeah, there's
yours.
No,
the one that you killed or the other dudes.
The other dudes.
Oh, got it.
Most of the ones that, you know, we take, like, I'm going next weekend at Lateral Hog Hunting in Stamford, Texas. We'll do a couple days of rifle, and then we'll go with some primitive bows and atlatls with big stone points and projectiles. And
but it's kind of that atlatl's flexible, right? Like, it's not like it's not like a long stick or something. I mean, it is, but it's not like very rigid, I think.
No, if you can go to like YouTube Shorts or something, I have some atlatl throws on there, but it's a 7 foot long spear, and as you throw it, it kind of wiggles. And it kind of has this radio wave propagation where it kind of larger waves and eventually transfers to small. And with a big stone projectile, as it hits an animal, that kinetic energy carries and it just slices and dices. So
works its way in there, yeah.
Yeah, I've done it.
Go to his YouTube Shorts. It's the YouTube is Donnie
Dust Paleo
Tracks. Dust Paleo Tracks, yeah.
And there's some throws on there. Because I've done a lot of experiments with different universities about ancient hunter-gatherers and how they go about killing things with an atlatl, the projectile. So there's, you know, one short one right there.
Put that up on the screen.
Yeah, play that with audio, please. Oh, shit.
Yeah.
It almost sounds like a bullwhip.
Yeah, you can get a little bit, but you could throw them 100, 150 yards. And that was teaching a class. We were out in the Utah deserts in these canyons. We had spent some time living in that kind of cave. Mm. If you keep scrolling, there's a couple more on there, but
is there any of you throwing it at an actual animal?
Yeah, there's a couple. There's a bunch though.
How many subscribers do you have on YouTube?
1.1 million.
Wow, dude. That's crazy.
Thanks.
It's awesome. I mean, for real, I'll go back to what I said earlier. I think it's a great escape. See, like,
go to that one, right?
For people who want to get out of the real world and watch your videos.
On the top row? Oh, this one.
So that's what it looks like.
Oh,
high speed.
Oh shit, dude.
That's what it looks like. Kind of slow.
So what's the thing called you're launching it with?
So because
it's kind of like a dog ball chucker.
Yeah.
Thing.
So that's actually the atlatl. The atlatl is essentially an extension of your arm, and it gives you kind of more mechanical advantage as far as creating a whip. Mm. And with the flex of the dart and then the projectile, that's what allows you to throw it 100, 150 yards, so on.
This is what Antifa should be using.
Exactly.
next time they set all the cities on fire, they should be using one of these bad boys.
What happens when you miss and then that hog ends up coming at you?
Then you don't eat, buddy.
You got a stone blade or you got other darts. So the long arrows are called darts. And in those darts, you usually carry two or three darts with, you know, some sort of fixed point or something called a foreshaft. So if, like, this is my atlatl dart, I can stick a foreshaft down into it and I can change it out with other projectile points that gives me options on what I want to throw. So when this goes into the animal, it makes contact, it cuts, animal kicks, my dart flies off, foreshaft stays in and slices and dices as it runs away.
God damn.
There's what it does to a bison.
Yeah, let's see that. Yeah. Right here?
Yeah, that's the
cut up an animal one.
Yeah, the one to the left, but...
Wait, which one?
Yeah, that one right there. I think this might be a slow-mo. Yeah.
All right, let's play some audio here.
Audio is no audio.
Okay, gotcha.
I'm pretty low-key when it comes to...
That's fine, don't worry about it.
So that's a dart hitting a bison, and you'll see it just... slide into it. So
wow, that's about 8-10 inches in there.
Damn,
god
dude.
Damn.
Yeah.
Fuck.
It will. I mean,
how long is your the blade or whatever's on there typically?
About like that. So maybe anywhere from 4 inches to maybe 9 to 10 inches, based on like what projectile you want to test. I kind of go with a little bit shorter one in case you do miss. You know, if my foreshaft is hafted to here, if I break my tip off, I can just readdress it and then kind of get it back into action. But it's fun.
It's awesome, man. And with your book, I love the cover, by the way.
Oh, thanks.
Gigantic fan. Simon & Schuster.
Yeah.
A big boy company, obviously, that's doing this thing. I always ask our guests the same thing who are coming out with a book. Did you do the audio book?
Not yet.
Okay. Because it's listed on Amazon right now, and it's got you personally listed. So I was like, are you the one that's going to be reading it?
Yeah, once it goes on to Amazon and we start that like audiobook process, I'll do it. And I think I'm going to do my first two books in audiobook form and then roll into this one.
Okay, great.
Yeah, you got to. Some people can get away with having a reader, but if you're
not
somebody
you,
who speaks, like people know your voice by now, you got to fucking do it.
Absolutely. That's
you got to do it, and that'll be a whole new world, because even when you go to Amazon and just type in the book. If First thing that comes up is audiobooks now.
Smart.
Because everybody's listening to podcasts, audiobooks.
Yeah.
Hardbacks and paperbacks are kind of second now. So I would do it if I were you.
Okay.
Because this is the one we purchased on here. Because it allowed us to do it. So we've already bought the audiobook.
Oh, no shit.
Yeah. It doesn't come out. It says August 6th.
I bought the hardback because I like to have it.
I'm an audio guy. Okay. And I love it. I used to be super into hardbacks.
Yeah.
With somebody like you, again, it depends on who the person is.
Gotcha.
If I want to hear their voice, like when Matthew McConaughey was on, audiobook first. I love the guy's voice. Same with you.
Gotcha.
Your voice was instant when we met earlier, and I was like, cool, man, I'm going to buy that audiobook. But it doesn't come out till August 6th. So
I'll start.
Pressure's on.
Yeah, bro. I'll start working on it. I apologize.
I like how it's got you listed already. It's like Simon & Schuster's like, you're definitely reading this one.
I mean, it's going to take you a week to record it and then 2 or 3 weeks to edit it. So it's not like you got to get on it now. This thing doesn't come out technically until
now. You're good with AI. It's super easy to edit now, so you're good to go.
Right on. Yeah.
What's a situation where you've been out there and you thought to yourself, you know what? I don't know if I'm going to live through this.
Yeah, that was actually last year. I had a pretty extreme one where I was doing some scouting in these canyons, and and I had been into them several times before, but I dropped from the top side of the canyon. Usually I'd entered the lower side, the river side. And I knew when I entered the lower side, there was water at the top. And this time when I dropped in, there was no water at the top, but water typically flows downhill. Eventually I could get to the river. And I spent like 4 days trying to find water, a clean source of water. And I should just caveat that when I say dropping down this canyon, it's not like, you know, you're hiking down. It's kind of like a shimmy down some slick rock. You're crawling through a hole, then you're kind of ledging out and then jumping down. It's quite a bit of work. And once I got down there, I'm looking for the water. So I start walking down the canyon. I'm not finding any. Day one goes by, day two goes by. And I'm like, I'm running out of kind of steam here. So I start walking back up the canyon and I'm like, all right, you know what you need to do. The best option is start finding those deep pockets of sand and stone and dig. So I come to one pocket, I start digging. Eventually I'm able to create a little bit of a, you know, dugout area, and it starts to fill just with dirty, just nasty water. I slap my face in it and just start sucking it down. You don't want to do that, but when you're at that point of like dehydration, you got to get water in your system. I'd rather have the runs for the next 5 days than be dead out in the middle of a desert. So I drink that water, get back to the top of the canyon, shimmy up these cliffs and these, you know, little holes and rat caves, get all the way to the top. And as soon as I get to the top, I start to get the worst tunnel vision. Like when you're going down as like a heat casualty, tunnel vision, my body is just cramping everywhere. And I just kind of like not really pass on the ground, but I kind of like hunker down on the ground. And I had to start mentally finding locations that I could move from point A to point B. And it was from shade to shade, because it's like maybe 95, 98 degrees out there, intense heat. And as I'm kind of like hunched over, I'm dry heaving. You've been in that spot before where you're just like, I'm going down. I'm dry heaving, and I start seeing these little, you know, juniper trees just casting enough shade. I'm like, all right, you got to get up. You got to go from here to that pocket of shade. And I knew I had about 2 miles to go before I could actually get to my truck and just get up, start moving to that little pocket of shade. And I'd sit there and I'd probably kind of not necessarily black out, but kind of just slowly kind of like get that tunnel vision, kind of kick my head into action and kind of come out. And it was just ebbing and flowing with this darkness. And I did that for 2 miles. And I think probably the last maybe like 200 yards, I honestly thought like it was game over. I was going to be that statistic. You're 200 yards from your truck, a guy that does survival and all this sort of stuff, and he dies so close to his truck. And I was like, there's no fucking way you're dying out here. That, you know, like your drill instructor starts screaming in your head, and you got your old buddies from the military be like, quit being a pussy. And you're like, fuck you, you're goddamn right. You know, and you just sack up and do it. But that was close. I will say I had not gotten to that point in probably like 15, maybe 16 years of just extremes, like out in the desert.
You think Eddie Vedder is going to write a song about you? Like you're that close to death?
Oh man.
Yeah.
I was, especially with a heart attack, like I have to stay hydrated or it just makes everything works. Like I have this where they put the stent in my arm. So I have like this pseudo kind of like aneurysm on my wrist. And as I get like dehydrated, it like slowly rises like a, like an old turkey thermometer. Mm. And this thing is like rock hard. I'm pulling my skin. I've got no sweat and I'm just like, I'm not, I haven't pissed. I'm just honestly thought I was going to die. It was, it would have been a pretty, you know, interesting way to go, but I was like, fuck dude, that was serious.
Do you have that in your mind? Do you have the dream way that you want to go out? Is it going to be like a Brad Pitt Legends of the Fall thing where you're going against a bear and then that's it? You die in the wilderness.
God, that was an amazing thing. I would love for that to happen.
Right?
Yeah, I would be down for that. But I think the reality is I'll probably have another heart attack in probably the next 20, 25 years. Once you have one, it's very likely for you to kind of have a second one. So it's, which is, you know, not to like, that's really the premise of like my first book is like the acceptance of death and how you can go about changing it. So I know as a 37-year-old male, the probability for me to have a second one is exponential.
You're 37 right now?
No, I'm 44, but I had it when I was 37.
Okay, yeah, okay.
So at that time, it's like, all right, you know this to be a fact. You know it is very likely this is how you're going to expire from this planet. So knowing how you're going to die, what are you going to do now? Like, are you going to sit here and kind of live this woe is me lifestyle, or are you going to take the necessary steps to try to prolong that as much as possible? Like, I've got the easiest solution to my death. I'm not going to die in a car accident. Combat's over, maybe. Yeah.
Well, we'll see.
We'll see, right?
Yeah. Maybe we'll do some domestically. Yeah. We'll see. Yeah.
Fingers crossed, right?
Yeah, we'll see if Trump gets locked up, you know?
But, I mean, my mentality is like, all right, that's the most likely course of action. So now you have, like, an added advantage over the rest of the people on this planet. And if that's how you're going to go, what are you going to do to prevent it? Because, like, yeah, everyone has their brushes with death, but I'm like, that is something that can happen very, very easily. Whether I was out in a desert walking or I was, you know, walking through an airport from going one elevation down to another, it could happen. So now you got that little bit of a bonus. What are you going to do? So for me, it's living life to the fullest, you know, whether it's, you know, eating wild foods and, you know, going on adventures, spending time with my kids. It's pretty easy to manage once you've kind of faced death in a kind of a very realistic way, because you can't see the heart. You know how healthy it is, how well you can run, all these sort of things. But I mean, I could wake up tomorrow laying next to my girlfriend in the hotel bed and that could be it. So you just fucking go hard as you can, nonstop, embrace everything and just never turn back, you know.
Butt fuck life. That's his next book. It's called Butt Fuck
Life. BFL. Butt Fuck Life.
It'd be sweet. Yeah.
Hashtag Butt Fuck Life.
I know. Put an orange cover on it. Simon and Schuster be amped about it. They can put a star through the U.
Well, it looks just like that, actually.
Yeah, exactly. Last question here before we get to the drinking bro of the week. Are you wearing shoes during any of this?
Not all the time. Sometimes I have like moccasins I wear. Sometimes I'm barefoot. Sandals. I didn't want to look short, so I put on shoes now because I just had to be taller than one guy here.
Yeah, so. Obviously. And I get that. And you're not taller than me, but that's another story.
No, I mean,
you can't be everything. You know what I'm saying? You can't be everything in this life. No.
Sometimes it's sandals, shoes, moccasins, you know, case by case.
Okay. Because when I watch like Naked and Afraid, as soon as they take their shoes and socks off, I'm like, man, I couldn't do that.
Game over.
I'm not doing that bullshit, but dude.
None of that shit's real either, though. They're like 25 feet from a trailer.
Yeah.
Well, to an extent.
The first thing you would do is probably make shoes. Some sort of sandal, some sort of foot covering.
Yeah.
There's a logical process into like, what do I have? What do I don't have? You know, like, I need shoes. I need something to protect my
feet. Well, a friend of ours, Tiffany, she was in the Air Force. She was at SEER school. She was a survival specialist.
What's her last name? I know her.
Heart.
It's something else now because she got.
We almost did a show.
Zabba Ding Dong or some shit. I don't know.
Black hair.
Yeah.
We almost did a show together. We filmed a pilot out in Colorado. Right?
Yeah, oh, really? She's cool. Yeah, so she knows a lot about this shit. And we anytime any survival person comes on, I think she was the first one. We ask them, if you could only take one thing to the place you're going, what would you take? And she always says a knife appropriate for that area, so you can make everything else.
Yeah, I'd bring probably a steel water bottle. Because I can make a fucking knife. I mean, with any one of these rocks you come around here. But it's very hard to process water. Mm. You got to think about it. Like, you can build buckets and bowls and hot rock boil. Unless you find a spring, it's dirty water. It's 3, maybe 4 days, and then you've got dysentery, beaver fever. You know,
if you beaver fever.
I had that
fever.
In college.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Internally
the
or
got the best of me. Both. Yeah, so it was all over my face and chest and
did you
and private parts obviously and it's just you work through it, you know, you just kind of
your body's going through changes, you're growing up, it's all normal, don't worry about it.
It is what is beaver fever?
It's like basically waterborne pathogens from animals taking a dump in the water. So Giardia, Cryptosporidium, you can get like hepatitis, worms, all sorts of stuff.
God damn,
from
untreated so that's water. How Kid Rock got it.
Yeah, yeah. Sure is.
Oh dude. No, it's not him. It's Tommy Lee.
Tommy Lee.
This
Tommy
guy
Lee.
The hepatitis.
Yeah.
He's got like seven of them, I think. How do you purify water out there?
The best thing to do is to boil it 212 degrees. You can see the rapid water boiling. If you don't have something like a steel water bottle to boil it in, you do have a fire or you even have some simple stones, you can craft a small bucket or a shallow bowl out of some wood or even a big depression in the ground with some big leaves. And then you heat up rocks and you keep those rocks in the fire. You take your dirty water, put it in that bowl, and then take your hot rocks, put it in the water, and it will flash boil it. It will have particulates. It will be a little bit murky, but it will be safe to drink. It won't have any pathogens in it. So there's difference between filtering and then purifying. Filtering removes particulates.
Yeah.
Purifying kills.
I mean, everything. You can filter through a piece of clothing or something, though.
Yeah. You can filter it out.
Leaves. Or even leaves or sands in a pinch. I mean, that's relatively easy as well.
Absolutely.
For sure. Now's the point in the show we get this thing called the Drinking Bro of the Week, which is someone who has inspired you or helped you become the person you are today. Yeah. Who would you like to give the Drinking Bro of the Week to?
I think I would give it to an old Marine Corps kind of leader. His name was Sergeant Philip Veracruz. He was this short little Mexican guy that used to run our dicks into the dirt and just drill us nonstop, but he kind of crafted my mentality going forward as far as kind of how to handle adversity and life and challenges. And yeah, he's a good role model, good hero.
That's awesome. Does he know what you're doing today?
Yes,
he does.
Yeah.
Is so, he amped about it? Is he following you?
He's definitely following stuff. He's just like, all I know you is this, like, you know, young Marine. Mm-hmm. And now you've like morphed into this. And, you know, so we work with vets in various different ways. So he's all pumped, man.
Yeah, that's awesome.
That's cool.
He could co-author Butt Fucking Life.
BFL.
Get him to
BFL,
be a co-author and hashtag, put him on the cover. Then.
Hashtag BFL.
And then get matching BFL tattoos, obviously.
I don't know, man. You might, I mean, it's not my jam, but hey. Lead the way.
We'll see how it goes.
We'll see what happens. But back to what I was saying earlier about not missing the show every single day. This is why I also don't want to miss it, is because this is the greatest job on the planet. I would never get to meet someone like you in real life. And we do this every day with people from all walks of life.
Cool.
And it's the most fascinating thing of all time, because there's never a dull day. Even when you walked in, you're probably, yo, what the fuck is going on in here, right? But like, never in a million years would I get to talk to somebody like you or interact and learn about your story and all this other shit. This is one of the greatest episodes of all goddamn time. It's wild, because you come in and it's like, all right, cool, you're a book and it's a caveman and all this shit. And it's like, you're a real goddamn dude doing this shit, man.
Appreciate it, man.
And I get the allure of it. I understand the followers, everything. There's some people who've been on the show in the past where I was like, what the fuck do they do?
Really?
Yeah. Like, we had somebody was in like fucking aerobics or some bullshit, had a million gajillion followers.
Aerobics?
Yeah, and a publicist is like, oh, you got to have this person on or whatever. And I was like, you sit there and talk to them, and you're like, cool, man. After about 8 minutes, man, you work out.
Yeah. It's that kind of person that gained some notoriety from solving problems that they created for themselves.
Yes.
You know what I mean? It's like, oh, cool. That's should have never happened. You shouldn't exist.
You're doing it just out of pure will of like, hey, I just want to do this every day.
Yeah, for sure.
Which, again, is probably why all of us will now follow you. Or,
I appreciate it.
Yeah, dude. Just even a pop out of your day for 60 seconds and look at a fucking TikTok.
Yeah.
It helps.
I appreciate it. Yeah, that's what it's there for, man.
Because there's days where you're like, man, I want to kill that cyclist. Like, I'm this close to murder, but I got three kids. And then now I get to pop on one of your TikToks and be like, all right, man, I'm not going
to
do it today.
Well, now you know how to murder them.
Bingo.
And get away with it.
I was going to say, you got to pre-dug holes.
Maybe that'll be the next book.
Pre-dug holes, that's actually my fourth book.
And I'd ask pre-dug for your number holes. To help me. you don't have a phone.
the book's just called, well, he'll send you a grid coordinate.
Yeah, I'll send you a grid coordinate. You'll be good.
I'll have Dan read it. I don't know how the fuck to read that shit. I'm not even gonna lie to you. On the Saturday, we're like, oh yeah, yeah, 161 Northeast, 43 Northwest. Yeah, that's not I'll be there.
Totally got it. Yeah. Totally got it.
Just, those aren't even numbers in whatever you're talking about.
I mean, 43 would be a parallel, yeah. But yeah, you're not gonna find it like
Greenwich. There's the time zone. It's a lot of longitude, latitude. You'll get it. You understand. The book is called Wild Wisdom, Primal Skills to Survive in Nature. It is available for pre-order. It also let me pre-order the audiobook that is downloaded and will drop, and it will be your voice when it comes out August 6th. And that's the other hilarious thing when people have books, is we always buy the books, but they'll just show up, and I'll be like, oh, fuck, that's right, dude. I remember when we had that person on, and I bought the shit. So I can't wait to hear your voice August 6th. I'm looking forward to it. Tell everybody where they can find you.
You can't find me. That's the whole point. You won't. No.
Social media.
Social media. Yeah. Donnie Dust, DonnieDust.com. And that's, you know, pretty much will lead you everywhere you need to go. Instagram and, YouTube's, yeah. All that sort of jazz. Just Donnie Dust and, you'll come across it.
So perfect. And again, the audiobook, Kindle, and hardcover is available for pre-order already on Amazon out there. Do yourself a favor and get it. Looking forward to it, my man. Great story. Great dude. Really appreciate you being appreciate on the show today.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having me here. This is awesome.
Absolutely, man.
This is cool.
Go to iTunes, rate the show a 5-star, and leave a quick review. Also, head on over to Spotify. It's just a 5-star, and you can walk away. Unlike Donnie, we've got to whore ourselves out for just a little bit of scratch to get through the fucking day. We appreciate you tuning in. For D'Anthony Holloway, Donnie Dust, I'm Ross Patterson. This is the Drinking Bros Podcast. Good night, everyone.